All right, guys, we got a special guest in today. We've got Ned McPherson, who is my bro. Let's not. He's really my bro. Okay. Spoiler alert. We know each other. One of the first guys I met in Miami. Ned has scaled up a digital growth agency, NROC Growth, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in revenue.
Yeah, yeah.
What we're going to talk about is that it didn't start like that.
Yeah.
It started with experimentation. It started with a check that you received that you were like, wait, thanks for the money. I don't have the business built yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I think the agency model is something that if you're looking to start making money, you've got some skill. That's the quickest, fastest path there. Ned's business is focused around the growth hacking model, basically looking at e-commerce companies, tearing down their businesses from an analytics standpoint, figuring out what's going on, and then going in there and solving those solutions. So I was so excited when Ned agreed to come on and do this, because he's the guy, he's been a mentor for me, and he's the guy that's gonna shoot this straight, and you can pick his brain, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the company itself founded about 6 years ago, background in statistics, and I wanted to focus on, at the time, helping business scale, understanding their data and what that meant, right? And it was a very broad offering, and I basically just did it on the side. I was running another company with a couple business partners, and that was, you know, moving along and doing what it was, you know, we were moving, not that fast, but we were growing. And I started to kind of get into some of these different groups. I was actually part of a Vistage group, which is a Vistage. It's like an organization for CEOs of companies, okay, right? It's kind of like a junior version of YPO type of thing. And I had talked about this success that we had with the company and how I, at the time, was using Google Analytics to attribute certain successes to certain consumer cohorts and this and that.
Real quick, guys, what Ned's referring to is e-commerce companies spit off a ton of data.
Yeah, yeah.
And most business owners, the people that own the e-commerce companies, have no idea what it means.
None. Yeah. Well, I thought they did.
Right.
I thought they did. Right. And so I started talking about it, and this gal that was in my group was like, hey, could you do that? Could you do something like that for us?
Right.
You
know, reviewing the data and making sense out of it.
Yeah. And she had an e-commerce business. So I dug right in and produced a report, and they were like, no one's done a report like this before. And I thought it was kind of standard. Mm. And so I started to do more of those, and then, you know, got a few more referrals, and all of a sudden started to build up. And now my side hustle became bigger than my main business.
Right.
Quickly. So the writing was on the wall. And so by nature, what it's grown into now, what we are, is we're a full service consumer analytics and growth agency. So our job is to work with either digitally native or businesses that have heavy direct to consumer digital, you know, basically like a website, right?
Right.
An e-commerce site that's a heavy component of their omnichannel revenue stream. Our job is to study the funnel data, the consumer lifecycle data, try to understand patterns with intra-funnel conversion rates, trying to understand AOV patterns, trying to do some more advanced cohort analyses, or even build out predictive analytics models to say, how can we get you to grow faster? That's what it's all about, right?
Grow
That's
faster, make more fucking money.
Yeah, grow faster, make more money. And like, what's the metric that matters right now? And a lot of times I'll work with some of these brands. I've got a few brands that are household names as an example, and I've dug into their data. And first off, I find that there's like, you know, the data itself is super non-hygienic. We end up having to tear things down, build what are called like custom ETL schemas to basically extract their data, transform it properly, and then load it, and then actually be able to like query that data to get some reasonable and rational information out of it. And these are big brands. They're doing 120, 150, 160 million on their website a year on top of retail presence. So these are, you know, these are pushing billion-dollar valuation brands, if not greater. And just finding that like the fundamentals aren't even there from a data perspective. So then we'll get in and then we'll analyze, find unique things that we're like, that's interesting. You know, like female iOS users are super under indexed here.
Right.
What do you bet if we experiment with a new personalization there, or a new, you know, launch an A/B test, we might be able to move that metric and then we'll do that. And so then the team will execute on it. We'll move that metric and then we move on to the next. So it's like test to test, metric to metric, constantly empirically backed, super hypothesis rich, right? But it's all based around their data,
right?
And just the number of businesses out there that are actually data centric is very, very few.
Yeah. So just to bring this down to earth a little bit, it's the biggest businesses. The business you walk down the street, you walk in the design district here in Miami. The biggest businesses, right? Half of their presence is online, and even they don't understand their data.
Yeah, well, two of the businesses in Design District are my clients.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, these are, again, household names. Right. Like, I mean, if you go on their website right now, you, like, a lot of the experiences you'll see with features, functionality, personalization is based on what my team is doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you got to this point, which is where we're right here, now. We're talking about this right now. But you got to this point through effectively an accident.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah, sure.
And the important thing to note here is if you have the awareness, right? So Ned, clearly interested in this type of problem solving, sensitive to the way that e-com companies collect data. If you have this awareness just about yourself, right? Run that experiment and turn that thing potentially into a conversation, and then potentially after the conversation into your first paycheck.
Yeah.
Which I said before, you got the paycheck before you had the freaking business built.
Yeah. Right.
And that is what we're going to dive into, because there is no golden road to getting everything working out perfectly. There is no briarless path where you're just floating towards success. It is a completely crazy iterative shit show of a process to be an entrepreneur. And that's hopefully what I want to push out in this conversation between you and I. I'm going to let you kind of walk through that business model.
Yeah.
But first, let's just, how do we know each other?
How do we know each other? Yeah, I think it was, where were we? Yeah, mutual friend. Classic. Mutual friend, yeah. Over in Miami, we're going to a couple of years ago, right before COVID hit.
Right.
Yeah, and there was some big art event in Miami, and, you know, just kind of a two young bulls about Miami running around
right.
at the time.
The two wild men in the woods.
Well, that's actually what Spencer said. Our buddy, he called me and he was like, "I met your match," and I'm like, "Doubt it." And he's like, "I met your match." And he's like, "You got to come out with us tonight."
Friends are important, everybody.
Yeah.
So Ned and I met at a networking event, basically some gallery party where you sit around and drink cheap wine and pretend you're fancy. But what I thought was cool about Ned is I knew he was plugged in to the scene in Miami. I knew he had a great business. And so for me, that was super interesting. You're probably one of the first people I met here in Miami. And like, I feel like when you're in hustle mode, this is something I wanted to dive into. It's like when you're fully in hustle mode, you stop hanging out with friends, you stop networking.
Yeah, big time.
When you started your agency, like, let's talk about how hardcore you were working in that first stretch.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely went through an evolution. I mean, I think the best example of that was 2018. So to give a little backstory on it, I started the agency towards the tail end of 2016. I had done it, honestly, non-incorporated. I just had some people who were asking me for a particular service. I have a background in statistics. Honestly, I dove real deep into the world of consumer analytics and trying to understand consumer patterns and why certain people were better archetypes for other companies than others. And started to help a few businesses on the side. A couple of them offered to pay, kind of was sharpening my knife when I was a little bit younger. And that turned into this little side hustle, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I really incorporated it towards the end of 2016. 2017 was an interesting year, to say the least. I got myself in a lot of debt, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Made a lot of wrong decisions. Had an immediate growth curve right out of the gates where I got this initial client. They were paying me like $2,500 a month. And I was like, oh, this is cool. It's a little side money. I'd already had another company I was running with some business partners at the time. And that was chugging along. And then they referred me to another. So I got a second one. Now I had like a little $5,000 on the side. I'm like, okay, this is becoming meaningful. And then I closed a $7,000 a month one. Okay. So now all of a sudden I've got six figures. Well, what should be six figures on an annualized basis as a side hustle. And I'm like, okay, writing's on the wall. There's a demand here. I'm getting, at the time, not realizing service market fit, right? Which is the equivalent of product market fit. I didn't really know what I was doing at the time, but I started to see that there was, you know, the writing was on the wall and that there was a demand for this. So
I want to slow you down one second, just because what everyone needs to like hear about this story is, you know, spoiler alert, like you're doing hundreds of thousands of dollars a month in revenue now. Okay. So everyone, this is a humble beginning story, which started with one scrappy client. Basically, hey, I have a skill. I know how to do X. And people start to ask me to do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I can charge a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And maybe you charge a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right. And now you have your third client. Now it's this is a full, you know, a full rate right. closer to what you would say, I'm a real business. I get to charge my big $7,000, $10,000 a month, whatever it is.
Right, right.
So in the beginning, not pretty.
Right.
Not elegant.
Not pretty at all, no.
Fucking fucked up.
Right.
This is what I want people to hear about this story.
Yeah.
Now we can jump back into it. Because I think everyone has this idea that you you just all of a sudden go from like having this skill set to just smoothly ramping up, you know, from 25 to 50,000 to $100,000 a month in revenue. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
For early stage entrepreneurs, couldn't be further from the truth. It's the exact opposite of that. Now, late stage entrepreneurs have refined the model so well, and they know, and probably the key, I guess, maybe ethos that I could talk about today is my number one saying in business, what I always back into is build what you can sell. Honestly, it's the most important thing. So many people, it's like, you're all great at building shit, whether you're an app developer, whether you're a designer, whether you've got the gift of gab, whatever, everybody can build something. Try to sell it first. See if there's a legitimate demand before you actually go build something of value. So seasoned entrepreneurs who have done this before have mastered that skill, right? Absolutely mastered that skill. And not to
sell it before you build it.
Absolutely. Not to digress too much, but I created a second company where it's a solutions company that has a line of affinity to what I do now. But long story, without getting into the intricacies of what the company does, I took my own medicine on it, and this was about 2 years ago. Right before COVID hit, so I guess it was about 3 years ago. And I was pitching it to two of my clients as an ancillary service, as a tack on. It was a whole nother company, and I was very straightforward with them. This is a different business. At one point, I closed the first deal, and Brett, who was my first client, was giving me a check in advance, and he said, what do I make the check out to? I hadn't created the name of the company yet.
Right.
Dude, I hadn't even thought of the name of the company, let alone incorporate it, let alone all the bullshit people. It's like, nothing. It's like I got all the way to the point where there was a check in hand and I was like,
wait a second. Yeah, maybe I should put a title on this thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an example of building what you can sell.
That's building what you can sell. And it's also not dressing up in your dad's suit when you're a kid. Right. It's like doing business in real life as opposed to I got my lawyer and I got the LLC and I did all the things I was supposed to do to feel like I'm doing business.
Exactly.
No, doing business, it's not pretty. You don't open the little instruction manual.
Right.
It starts organically like this, and it starts with when that fucking first check comes.
Exactly.
Then you're in business.
Right, because you've got demand.
Before, you're not in business.
No.
You're experimenting.
It's a good way to put it. You're experimenting. Will the market buy what you're offering, whether it's service-based, product-based, et cetera? And again, there is the graveyard of applications and SaaS products out there that never took off, that had tremendous product development went into them. Mm-hmm. But the problem is they put all this effort in and then realized no one gave a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oops, kind of did that one backwards, didn't we? They raised venture capital, et cetera. Ain't God forbid angel investors, friends and family around who don't have a clue. They're just investing.
And everyone gets screwed, not just you and your co-founder.
Everybody.
Now your mom, dad, and the guys next door and the investment bank get screwed. The people in Silicon Valley,
and
that
worst
threw money.
Of all, the future you get screwed. Because the next time you actually do this right and you go back to the pool or back to the well for money, you're asking the people you already burned in a way,
right?
So it's like, be very cautious on how you're going to do this, right? So building what you can sell is critical, right?
I'm all in on that. And I learned that even more from watching how you were running your business. Also from watching how you were running so much testing with everything.
Yeah.
Because really, sell it before you can build it. That's one of the... It's downside protection. You're like, I'm not investing anything in this but time.
Yeah.
I'm not pulling anyone else in this but myself. So you've basically insulated yourself from a lot of risk, and you're trying to get closer to the truth as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And if you don't, no one gets hurt.
Yeah.
Right? You lose a few months of your life.
Yeah.
You sleep on a freaking blow up mattress and that's it.
Yeah,
start over.
I mean, I got a mutual friend of ours actually who's been asking me for some advice as of late as to, like, he's got a couple ideas with companies he wants to start, and he's like, should I do that? And it's like, dude, go to a bar, go to wherever you think your consumer archetype is, and when somebody, the next person says, hey, what do you do? Test.
Right.
And say something different to every fucking person who asks you, and watch.
When their eyes light up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, watch what their eyes do. Watch what their body language. Oh, that's super interesting. How did you come up with that? And pay attention to questions. If they're engaging you with questions, Now you've at least got a fish on the hook that like maybe you do have product or service market fit, and then validate. So it's like, okay, now that you've got a little feedback from the marketplace, so to speak, that maybe they would buy it, now start to flirt with price points, start to flirt with this and that. Ideally do what I do, go all the way to the point where someone's like, okay, here's a check.
Right.
And then get all the rest of the bullshit figured out after that.
Right.
So I mean, nothing's more important than this. So kind of like circling back to our conversation, seasoned entrepreneurs get it. Right. They get it. For them, yeah, it really is that smooth. But the new entrepreneur, man, you got to just hack it at first. You really do. And then, again, you're in that just elusive pursuit of product or service market fit. Mm-hmm. And the best example, kind of the best little metaphor I ever heard for this, when you have product or service market fit, it's going to feel like you're chasing a boulder down a hill trying to catch it. Mm-hmm. And when you don't, it's going to feel like you're pushing a boulder up a hill.
Right.
So if right now in your business or whatever you're doing, et cetera, if it feels like, man, this sucks. Every day it's a push. It's so hard to get a client. It's not a good sign.
Right.
You may need to like honestly pull chocks and try something different.
Pivot or switch. It doesn't necessarily mean, hey, I'm done with the age. I'm done with this agency. I'm done playing guitar. I'm done. It's like, well, no, tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, right. Just course correct.
Course correct.
Yeah. And honestly, my model was totally, it wasn't totally different. I had packaged it differently at first. And then I made a few really critical tweaks. And that's when we really took off after that. But again, constantly testing. So, you know, again, like in the beginning, yeah, hacked it, absolutely, trying different things. But like my biggest problem then, which still in the large parts is still the biggest problem today, is meeting client demand. That's how you know you got product market fit. I can't keep up with their demand. And I'm constantly trying to find ways to hire. I mean, we have 63 people on the team now. Mm-hmm. I got a pretty big employee base. It's like, it's a lot, man, you know. But again, even with this many people, it's constantly, clients are trying to get more of you, trying to get more of your information, trying to get more of your intellect, trying to get more of your attention, et cetera, which is your scarcest asset at the end of the day. And that's, again, it's like, okay, yeah, we got product market fit. We got service market fit. Now we just got to figure out all the rest.
Right. Systematizing, getting, basically making sure you're insulated and only making the decisions that only you can make.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So before I walked in, because I was late like a jackass, stuck in classic Miami traffic. So producer Andrew's chilling with Ned here, and he's just kind of like, hey, how did you know, like when did you know and how did you know that you wanted to go a different path here, mm-hmm. that you wanted to go in the independent route of being an entrepreneur as opposed to joining McKinsey or whatever, Goldman Sachs or whatever example you want to use. When did you know that? And then how did you know that? What's the story there? Because it sounds like I missed something really cool. And I'm sure everyone wants to hear this story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking back on it now, what it was just this like desire to hustle, you know, like we talked on. Mm-hmm. And I'd had that in college. And I just honestly, college was an interesting experience for me, man. I had a great time. It was fun. I made some great relationships. I was in a fraternity the whole nine. It was a lot of fun. But about like halfway through, I was like, all right,
I'm good.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go out into the world and to cut my teeth and to claw and to try to grow and win.
Okay.
And I just, it really, you know, I didn't think I needed the full 4 years, to be honest. Right. And I'm not necessarily encouraging people to you know, drop out early or anything like that. Had I had the opportunity to, I would have in full transparency. Yeah. Much to the dismay.
I wouldn't have. I was like, I'm good here. Yeah. This is pretty sweet.
I was ready to go, man.
Okay.
Real quick. Yeah. Okay. Freshman year was great. Sophomore year started to feel, by junior year, I was like, I'm ready to go. So I, you know, I kind of, you know, started reading a lot, to be honest, started reading more like personal development books and things like the classic stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And this and that. And like all things, opportunities will come across your way. You just have to know how to identify them and then take advantage of them aggressively. And so at the time, I got pitched on a network marketing company when I was in college.
That's translation. That is a pyramid scheme. That is what that means.
So
selling scissors.
I didn't know. No, it was a business selling deregulated energy and telecom services.
Oh, right? That's like scissors for people from Boston.
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't know anything about that. I was like, this is incredible. I was like, you can build a team and they'll support you and you'll get residual income. And I did all the math and built my projections and then all this and that. And I was like, I want to do this. So I went, I pitched my parents. I was like, I heard about this business. You'll never believe this. And they're laughing at me the whole time
because
they're
like, this is a scam.
Yeah. They were like, you know, cause again, you know, this is like, there's a million of these things out there. Right.
We won't name names, but I can rattle off like 10 right now.
And my parents, when they were super young in their 20s, did like Amway, this and that. So they knew the drill and they're laughing at me, this and that. But they were so encouraging. They were like, do it. go learn, do it, this and that. And I went like head first in.
This is after you graduated or you're still in college?
No, I was a sophomore.
Okay. So at this point I am like learning how many kegs I could fit in my Jeep.
Yeah. I was
like,
19.
While you're doing this.
Yeah.
Like,
I just 19, to, 20. I don't know. Something like that.
Just
yeah.
want to set the stage here.
I remember I was under 21 cause I got an award and I couldn't go to cause I couldn't drink yet. Cause you needed to show your ID.
But they're like, sorry, dork. Yeah, you can't come.
Loser.
We'll just give the award to someone else.
Yeah. But nonetheless, so I started with it and like, look, I made money with it. Not that much,
right.
But like, I mean, for a kid in college, it was
your
like,
network marketing dreams.
Yeah. When you're a kid in college and you know, every month you get anywhere between a $500 and a $2,500 check.
A nice little taste.
Crazy, man. Yeah. Are you kidding me? That's awesome. That's great. And so, I made a little bit of money, but that's who cares. Honestly, the money had nothing to do with it. The point was, is
you were transacting.
Yeah. And I was learning how to become a guerrilla entrepreneur.
Okay.
And I'll be honest, if there's such an industry where you got to learn it, it's that industry. Try cold marketing and network
direct sales and,
in New York.
Yeah.
Like, dude.
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. It was brutal. And like, right. I had these guys who were hot shots in the company and they had the cars and the houses and this and that.
Right.
And one of them was kind enough to mentor me at the time, kind of took me under his wing. This guy, Mike, and he, it's a pair of brothers, man. They're still to this day, we're really close friends. And, you know, he had told me one point, I'm like 21 at this point. I think I just graduated college. I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. So I'm going to make my money. I already know it. And this company I was really ingrained in. And he had this huge ass pad right outside New York. And he let me stay at his place in one of the guest bedrooms
critical.
For a month.
Critical to meet these types of people to give you a little taste.
Yeah. But I told him, I was like, I'll do what it takes. And he was like, the first night, dude, I remember he went, he had to run out to something. He left his journal on the kitchen counter, which had all his planning for the month. Dude, it looked like hieroglyphics. You couldn't fit another ink. Like you couldn't, there was everything, notes and meetings and this and that. And at the top, he had carved into this page, work harder. And I was like,
whoa.
Yeah. I was like, this dude was big time. Like they made millions. And I was like, that's really intense. And that was the first moment where it kind of hit me in the face that like, oh, the big guys really hustle hard.
Right. This isn't accidental.
No,
that
he's not.
Mike is living in the sweet pad in Jersey City, wherever. Where Hoboken?
I don't remember. He had this huge penthouse overlooking the city, but on the Jersey side.
Yeah, Hoboken.
He's in Hoboken. Or Edgewater, one of those.
So Hoboken Mike isn't just fell into some sweet, you know,
no,
you know, NYC skyline.
He's the number one in the company. The company had hundreds of thousands of reps around the world. And
right.
I mean, they're a big guy. If I said the name, some people might know the name.
So the dude's a savage and you basically found his notebook and realized deep it went.
Yeah. And I thought this guy was on Easy Street and it couldn't have been any further from the truth.
Interesting.
So that was the first thing. Night two, he sat me. We had already gone through this thing during the day. It was like 8, 9 p.m. at night. I was like, oh, it was a good day. He goes, you're not finished. And Mike's an intense dude.
Right.
And he goes, if you don't make 100 cold calls tonight, you're not sleeping in the house. You're sleeping in the Escalade out front.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he said to me. Swear to God. And I was like, ha ha. He goes, I'm not joking.
That's
and
amazing.
I was like, dude, I was like, I was
Andrew, watch
scared.
Out, man. I'm getting ideas.
I was kind of scared, but I was just like super fired up at the moment. And I'm like, this is what training looks like.
Right.
You know? And again, whatever you want to say, I got lucky, fell into that position or was opportunistic. I put myself in that position.
Well, it sounds like you were seeking this type of character.
Yeah, I think so. Right. And it kind of came to me and I took advantage of it because I came to him to be like, dude, is there any chance I can work under you for a month? And he saw something in me and that happened. So, and then, you know, long story short, I didn't stay in the company to be honest, obviously, because I've gone on and done many other things since then.
Right.
But that I learned so many lessons in that company. And to this day, I would say the majority of the real lessons that I employ every single day are not my ability to run a regression. It's my ability to interact with people that I learned from that company. It was an incredible experience.
Man. And getting this guy in your ecosystem was like taking the leap of faith and just being like, man, I'll just tell me what to do. I'll show up at any time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had done, you know, like, you know, played sports at a pretty high level and done the whole, you know, training camps and this and that. And so I'd like been through it.
Mm-hmm.
This was on another level.
Next level.
Yeah. Mentally, it was on enough. Physically, obviously not, but mentally it was on another level.
Right.
Yeah.
So you got your first taste of what it's like to actually get out there and grind. And you had a mentor to really be like, oh, well.
Yeah. I got the first taste, thankfully, to see what the daily habits were of a top producer.
Right.
I think is the best way to put it.
Right.
And they were nothing like I thought they were. it was not there were 10 times and like we were saying
right. And it's not lattes and champagne in the evenings.
No.
Yeah.
And these guys, I mean, he had a brother and they both did really well. And like, don't get me wrong, they partied and they vacationed hard and they had an awesome lifestyle, but right. Boy, did they
work.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And you know what? It's like we feel like we're pulling the rug out of people listening to this. It's like, you know what? That's part of the fun here.
Yeah.
This is what's going to make you tougher, smarter. It's going to enrich every other area of your life. Yeah. I mean, my on-ramp was like, my on-ramp was completely insane, and I was like drinking from the fire hose, so to speak, and I did not take to it the way that you took to it so quickly. It took me like years to get comfortable. I just was like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
This is cool. But I just like, I didn't equip myself to go and start to grind straight away. So it took me much longer. I needed to get my ass kicked for years before I was like, oh,
get your ass kicked and then learn how to kick your own ass, by the way, is another big one. He said something to me when I was down. I had just gotten my ass kicked.
Learn how to kick your own ass. Okay.
But I had gotten my ass kicked with some cold marketing thing, whatever. And I was bitching in the car. Like it was like 11 PM at night, whatever. I was coming from these things I was pitching at. And I was like, I said something to the fact, and I was like, why can't these people get it? Like, why can't it be easier for them to understand? And he just looks at me and goes, why can't you be better? I was like, yeah.
Dude, we got to get Mike on the podcast.
Dude, Mike's awesome. No, absolutely. And he's like, why can't you be better? It's literally what he said to me.
Right.
And it's like, yeah. So honestly, when I'm having, you know, if I find myself like bitching right now, like, can't believe this client's being like that, I always go back to that. I'm always like, why aren't you better?
Right.
You're so quick to judge your client. Why aren't you better? I said it to myself, you know, kind of thing. And it's like,
What you're doing is you're looking at it's the same thing, but you're looking at it from a different angle.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is your fault. And you're saying, well, no, I can change this myself. It's actually my fault. And that's a lot more empowering than saying, you know, it's your fault because I can't change you.
Yeah.
I can't make you sign again, re-sign, renew your contract, but I can get better.
Yeah.
I can deliver a better product next time.
Yeah.
And that's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Exactly.
So shout out to Hoboken Mike, man.
Yeah. Exactly.
Absolute maniac. I love this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. His brother was the same way, man. I mean, there were different people, but he was very
similar.
His
brother's name was Nicholas Crown.
His brother was Pat, yeah. they were awesome, man. So
that's fantastic.
I learned a ton. That you know, taught me a lot.
All right, so everybody needs to go out and find their Hoboken Mike.
If you can, but the problem is like the people who are doing it aren't, you know, they're so busy doing what they're doing.
But yeah, you're on the fringes, right? You're on the fringes, and then you see inside the Coliseum, and you're like fucking yelling to the guy, and you're saying, I'll do anything.
Here's the best thing you can do. Find that guy or that gal or whoever it is you admire the outcome and just say, can I just shadow you for a day or a couple of days? I want to learn your daily habits.
Right.
Dude, as I think it was John Maxwell said, it was a great line. The secret to anyone's success is found in their daily habits.
Hmm.
That's it. It's always there. So if you can shadow the people you admire the most and just watch what they do. And dude, I studied like Mike and Pat, studied it.
Really?
Everything, dude. Every fucking, I would see what type of clothes they wore. I was like, that's what I'm buying. Everything. Everything they did. That's what the food, the places they went to eat, the type of food they ate, everything. I tried to.
That's why we're wearing the same sweater.
I tried to literally embody like everything I could at the time.
I'm wearing the same pants as you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but seriously, honestly, find somebody and you know, study their daily habits. And that's the absolute best surefire way that you're going to do it.
Well, it's also kind of like you don't know anything else, so you might as well start with someone who's doing it right and try to emulate that. Right. See how that works out for you.
Seems logical, no?
Seems pretty logical.
Intuitive, yeah.
Let's take a step back and talk about validation because I get thousands of DMs every week. Hey, Nick, I don't have any money to start. If I got some money, I'd be able to start that business I want to start. Let's go through cheap-ass ways, everybody, to validate an idea.
Yeah.
I have my little mix. Let's hear.
Yeah.
How would you validate an idea?
Yeah.
Let's pretend in physical space, and which we talked about, survey, and maybe something digitally.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's take a service one at first, because that's the easiest, right? You've got an idea you want to monetize. We were talking about the agency life, which mm-hmm. is probably the easiest way to monetize and cash flow something that you hopefully are good at, right? If you've got an idea, man, go sell it. Mm-hmm. And again, don't sell doesn't mean you have to go fucking walk into some office on a Monday morning at 9 a.m. with like a notebook trying to like.
But it means move.
Yeah.
It do means something.
Get out there. So it's like, okay, you got an idea, right?
Right.
Let's assume you are going to create a agency where you're going to connect low cost but high value designers to companies in the United States, okay. whatever. And you've identified that there's designers in Indonesia, there's designers in Colombia, and there's all these different places. And you're like, you know what? I could create something here. These companies are consistently needing design, whether it's UI, UX, whether it's web design, whether it's packaging design, et cetera. That's always a sticking point that's tough for brands to find, like somebody really gets their ethos. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to arbitrage this. I'm going to go find some people who are billing X an hour, and I'm going to charge them X times whatever an hour, right?
Right.
Okay, cool. So who are your potential clients? Just like real quick off the top of your head, like who they might be? Well, maybe people of e-commerce sites, maybe people who are just launching their new products, et cetera. It's like, okay, let's just start with the latter, right? Well, what are people who are launching the new products doing? They are bootstrapping. They are guerrilla marketing. It's mm-hmm. not that hard to find them. They're all, they're dying.
They're on TikTok.
They're on TikTok.
IG.
They're DMing every influencer you can think of trying to get free press. So it's like, okay, maybe I'll just take a look around and see if I can find a few of them mm-hmm. and be like, so where do those people hang out? Right. And then try to get yourself as close to that situation as you can, mm-hmm. right? Wherever that is. And again, sell it. You sell it. Just get in a room. What do people do when you get into a new circle of people? What does everybody generally do when they're new? They'll be like, oh, hey, what's your name? Your name is like, oh, that's very good. Nick, what do you do?
Right.
That's almost always one of the first, if not the first, it's like the second or third question.
Right.
So it's like people are just giving you the like the opportunity and the stage right there. And
to walk you through
it.
Something.
Yeah, and then sell it. Hey, man, I got this great company, this and that. You know, you kind of fake it a little till you make it. I got mm-hmm. this great company. We connect these super, super talented but low-cost designers with companies here in the U.S., so it brings their costs down, and they can just ramp out design more. And again, if they're like, oh, that's cool, man, good for you. It's like, okay, all right, take that. What is that? And if they're like, oh, that's interesting. What kind of billing? Where are they from, et cetera? Okay.
But let's describe what your party line, when you have your party line, people go, cool. So what's your website? Can I sign up now?
Yeah.
Like when you have so much fit, mm-hmm. people are opening up their wallet. They're like,
sure.
Hey man, I've got a sunglass company.
Yeah. So that's a whole nother problem, right? Yeah, no, that's a whole nother problem. So you're basically saying like, well, what do you do if people are like, dude, I need that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's go.
Well, first off, a little mini congratulations. You nailed it, right? You found at least some degree of a service or product market mm-hmm. fit. So it's like, okay, go ahead and take their information. Hey, look, man, we are maxed out right now, but the moment I can let a new client, if you give me your information, I can let you know.
Right.
Done.
And then you take those 2 weeks to freaking rush like hell to build the goddamn thing.
Exactly. Go build it. Exactly. And ideally, you don't get just one. You get a dozen of this. And ideally, you go to different events or different, put yourself in different situations and environments and test your different ideas by selling it, you know? And, you know, maybe something that you'll learn in that process is that it's the very act of you selling it. Like you got the gift of gab a little bit and you're like, all right, well, maybe it's not what I'm selling. It's how I'm selling it.
Right.
That was something that I found with my career is that I worked on one hand with teams of data scientists. I mm-hmm. work on the other hand with teams that are, you know, digital marketers types of things or CEO of businesses who are running either digitally native or digitally heavy brands, right? Mm-hmm. So I got two very different archetypes of people that I'm dealing with. And what I found is that the data scientists that, who now work for me at the time that I was working with could, I mean, analyze things incredibly, but they couldn't explain it to you.
Right.
That you'd just be like, bro, I have no idea what you're talking about.
We're going to need a translator to show up here and just take care of this.
It's just like Japanese, you know what I mean? You can't even understand it at all. And on top of that, they do it with such like, and I hate to say it, sounds like I'm really throwing them under the bus. They tend to have such like a monotonous way of saying it. They're so monotone. They're just kind of like, yeah, well, you know, you ran this regression analysis and we did find that there's a 17.3%. And it's like, okay, stop. And then you talk to digital marketers who tend to be like front office. Okay, we're going to try this. We're going to try that. But they have no data centric or empirical rationality behind those. What I personally found.
Translation, that's flying by the seat of your pants with decision making.
Most of them. Yeah, right. Which is cool in the beginning, but not when you're running a $130 million e-com brand. Right. And so we come in and be like, wow, you guys haven't made a data driven decision in a long time. It seems where I found my specific skill set was being able to translate that data but at the same time, bring this degree of passion
right.
to them, where it'd be like, okay, we were studying New York City iOS using females who are hyper under indexed on your add to cart rate mm-hmm. by X percent this and Y. If we try these three tests, I think we've got this degree of probability that we're going to bump that here, mm-hmm. which would put your projected revenue there, mm-hmm. which now changes the whole landscape on what your AOV projections are doing, average order value projections, which means your CPAs are likely to come down. If we miss that, here's the three other tests that we can do right behind them. So like already, I'm not talking like, you know what I mean? They're already getting really into it. They're like, yeah, we could try that. We could try that. And it's seductive for them. It's hypnotic. Right. So my passion for trying to dig in and understand consumer analytics and data, this and that, translates into a sales message and a sales tactic, if you will.
And the ultimate sales tactic is you're connecting all of the pieces with return on spend.
Yeah.
So if your fee is X, you're basically saying through this experimentation that I've laid out and basically forecasted the various scenarios, you're going to get your money back times three. Right. By hiring me.
Right.
And that is a really, really easy fucking sell.
Yeah.
Because if you do something that costs X and it hands someone back 3X mm-hmm. into their pocket, the answer to that is usually, all right, well, I guess we'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And on top of that, notice how when I said that, I was like, if that doesn't work, we've got this, this, and that.
Right.
So they're like, this is the fucking guy I want on my team.
Right.
This guy is A, already thought of plan A, B, C, and D, and iterations of each one. He's mm-hmm. excited about it. I don't have anyone on my team who's this excited about data and right. testing things. And so again, I've found that that is a very hypnotic approach. That's what works really well for me. That's a skill set that I've been able to develop and kind of naturally had to a degree getting right. into this. So, you know, again, going back to your question, it's like, man, just test the fuck out of it. You know, use your inner circle, use your groups, use whatever networking abilities you can to test an idea that you're trying to sell. And don't just test. When I say test it, meaning like try to sell it.
Right.
And if it feels like you're pushing a little boulder up a hill, course correct. If it feels like you're chasing a boulder, we got people being like, hey, man, I didn't get your name. I didn't get your number. I'd love to. Do you have a website, et cetera? That's you're chasing a little boulder down a hill at that point. You know, now you're like, oh, shit, I got to catch up.
And this strategy, you don't need to even know how to use a computer to execute on this strategy. Mm-hmm. You just need to know how to verbalize what it is that you're working on or your vision, right?
Yeah.
And so no money has been spent.
No.
Nothing has been burned. No bridges have been burned.
No.
You've spent a few hours. You've talked to some people. You probably made a few friends in the process.
Yeah.
It's magical.
Yeah. And there might be some people thinking now, we'll be like, well, what if you pitch somebody and this and that, and then you don't do it? Right.
Wow. How many times have I done that in my life? Yeah.
And then it's like, well, aren't you going to have egg on your face? It's like, dude, they don't, they're going to forget.
If you could see the amount of egg on my face from history, I would be an egg man. I'd be fully egg.
Yeah.
human egg. Yeah.
But like, it's like, don't get bogged down in those. Like,
right.
It's just like, you're just making excuses at that point. It's
right.
like, whatever, man, it's not really a big deal.
Yeah. And so, okay. So let's pretend I had another, I wanted to go deeper on something, but let's pretend that you're like, I don't want to go out and talk to people. I mm-hmm. can't do that. That's just not going to happen.
Cool.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. So let's play this game. And I don't know if I absorbed this through working with you mm-hmm. through osmosis, but my whole thing is do that, but with a cheap little banner ad.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your three talking points. Create three or four different banner ads and run $5 of ads on Facebook and see which one gets the most clicks.
Yeah.
So if you're someone who's just like, hey, listen, man, I don't go to Toastmasters. I'm not speaking on stage. Like, can I do this from the comfort of my own home? The answer is probably. And you probably do it using Canva, Facebook ads and like, you know, $5.
Yeah. A little resourcefulness will go a long way.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, do that. But on top of it, why not just use even the free forums? Like,
let's talk about
like case in point, like Quora is one of the most underutilized growth hacks you can have out there. I mean, we did this.
That's Quora, Quora.com, Quora.com.
Yeah. Right. Which is a glorified Q&A board. And, you know, there's some dumbass questions on there, but there's also some really interesting questions that people ask. And the answers are really, some of the answers are really eloquent. And when you read the answers, here's what I would challenge you to do is go onto Quora. Type in something you're interested in, like, I don't know, like, how do I get a six pack, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And you go look and you'll see some dumbass answers. And then you'll see someone who will write an answer and you're like, whoa, like that dude or gal, whoever it is, like really knows their shit.
Right.
Really knows their shit. They're speaking at a level that is certainly above not only the layman, but even those who consider themselves educated.
The aficionado level.
Yeah. And what you'll find is take a quick litmus test of your mindset and I guarantee this, you'll be looking at that person as an expert.
Hmm.
You will edify that person. You've never met them. You read one little thing. You don't even know if they wrote it, but you're like, John Doe knows his shit. And then you'll find you might think of yourself reaching out to them, et cetera. That is a behavioral psychological phenomena, which basically if my knowledge base on a topic is just slightly above yours, even on the grand scheme of things, if it's nowhere close to expert status,
I perceive you.
You will perceive me as an expert, especially if I speak with confidence.
Right.
So, and I'm digressing a little bit here, but like the point being is you can go on to Quora and test the shit out of selling your ideas in the form of questions, because what will happen is, let's assume, like going back to that example, there's loads of questions on Quora where people are being like, hey, I'm trying to start a business, or hey, I want to do a side hustle, or hey, I want to scale my business. Those are three questions that have lines of affinity, but are different questions.
Right.
Here's what you do. Create a kick-ass answer, that is paragraphs long with data points, like put some effort into it.
And instantly pole vault yourself to the expert.
To the expert level, and then just change the first sentence.
Right.
Meaning change the first sentence. So it'd be like, yeah, man, you're trying to create a side hustle. That's totally good. One of the best ways that you could do that is by insert your answer.
Right.
Oh man, you're trying to start a business. Well, one of the things you could do, I know that's really challenging, is do your first sentence, insert your big answer, and you can rapid fire go through hundreds at that point.
Right.
And the point being is just get in the game, start talking about what it is you're passionate about, or in this case, what you're trying to sell, and see if anything bites. And people will come back. I found a business coach at one point through that. I read this woman's answer. I went to it. I ended up going to her site, and she said, "Have you seen Billions, the show?"
Yeah.
You know the therapist that they have in the office, which is based on a real thing I believe on Stevie Cohen's hedge fund, I believe is a real story, where she was an in-house therapist to keep the traders just on their game all the time. So
I needed one of those back in the day.
On this woman's website, it said, I forgot her name, whatever, Jane Doe. It said, consider or refer, it said something in a quote like, Forbes called me the real life.
Okay.
And I was like, that's pretty cool.
That's a branding. That's a hardcore branding.
Super. Yeah. Move right there. I booked a call with her. Right. That came from Quora. I read her answer on Quora. Right.
So your test might end up being lead generative.
Yeah. Totally.
By accident.
Yeah. But if I went on there right now, knowing what I know, right, and I've done this before, and I go on Quora, and anyone who's talking about boosting conversion rates, scaling AOV, if they're really intricate questions, like how do I get, an order of magnitude increase on the tertiary purchase AOV on my e-commerce brand, and I go in there and put one of my answers in that'll edify me as an expert, I can pretty much guarantee that there's some people who are going to respond to that, because I've done it before. I've done it in these types of forums. I've done it in written forums, et cetera. So it's just a long-winded way of saying that, like, even if you have no money for an ad, just get on Reddit, get on Quora, get into Check or whatever, and start talking about your idea. And if no one gives a shit, that's not a great sign.
Right.
Right. If you start getting some people who ask questions back, they don't have to be like, hey, what's your email? I want to talk to you. But if they just ask a question back, that's a good indicator that, like, you've got something.
Upvotes too. You don't
upvotes.
Yeah. There's all different ways to interact with the material.
Metrics,
But okay. So to maybe build like a principle here, what you're doing, like build a foundation under what we're talking about without using, specific marketing terms and, average order value, all these things that we're sort of rambling, rolling off here. Right. Mm-hmm. Like the idea is like you were very organized. I'm like, all that stupid shit you were just rambling about.
What the fuck is this guy talking about?
There's a lot of acronyms in digital marketing and advertising and e-commerce conversion, all this good stuff. But anyway, the bottom line is when you're going out there on the forums, you're going out there, you're talking to people in the bar, the coffee shop, whatever it is, you're building a map of reality.
Yeah.
Like, because you actually have no idea what people want if you're sitting at home by yourself in isolation.
Yeah.
And when you start to bump some molecules around and get into the room and start to, have a little mastermind with people, have coffee, start to shoot the shit with your people in forums and Quora, whatever, you start to go, oh, okay, you're triangulating what the hell people actually want.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that I believe that all successful entrepreneurs have to do, and it's also something that's not in a book. There's no book that says triangulate and bump into shit until it starts to work. But for me, that is the core principle, that if you understand that, you will 100% get what you want out of life. Because if you don't understand that, you will consistently fail, and or you might get lucky. And if you get lucky, you didn't learn shit.
Yeah.
So it's almost like winning the lottery. It's an empty. Yeah. It's actually a curse.
Yeah.
So bumping around and getting out there, this is building this map of the way that the world works. Yep. It's making you a wiser person. It's making you a tougher person. And ultimately, it's going to reward you, whether that's with financial rewards, whether it's with fame, great relationships. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You want to go meet a girl, get a girlfriend, get a boyfriend, whatever it is that you're looking for. Go out and start talking to people in the street.
Yep.
Because when you're in reading your dating book, you know, Dating for Dummies 101, right? Yep. You're not making contact with the real world.
Yeah.
You're reading, like you're playing dress up again.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing dress up again. So this is like, I made some comment I did some comment on private jet travel on social media. Mm-hmm. And it popped off. This is just 2 days ago. It popped off because I was basically saying, like, these people, these people that are so distant.
Yeah.
From reality or you know, renting the jets, or it's like, that's like wearing your dad's suit and saying, I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
It's like going through all the motions of being business oriented or understanding time,
yeah,
and the value of time without actually understanding it.
Yeah.
You're like, I've got the champagne glass. I'm on the jet, but I don't know how the fuck I got here.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the saddest sight.
Yeah.
On social media. That's actually the saddest sight even out in the wild.
Well, it's a complete illusion.
It's an illusion.
It's a complete fucking illusion.
Let's talk about it in Miami.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to take that example, take the jet example. So the last private jet that I was on, we got on.
Which one? The one yesterday, the day
before? We boarded at 5:30 in the morning, and we were working by 5:35. I mean, it was cool as shit. The jet pulled up. We were on. We were in the air like 90 seconds later. It was cool. It was really intense.
Right.
We were talking. I mean, we flew to Atlanta and then Atlanta to Providence, then back to Miami. And it was nonstop. It was a marathon of a workday. There was no...
Meaning they were working...
We were there for a reason.
On the plane.
Like, dude, yes. The most intense work session you've seen in a long time. It was my client, like this and that. It was full blown.
So
like,
was there champagne?
Before we land.
Was there caviar?
This is getting done. This is a discussion. No, there was none of that. I mean,
I'm just checking because people want to know.
No, there was none of that. It's like the private jet is a tool to accomplish your goals and a business sense faster. It is not in like, of course, like, yes, there's the luxury factor on a vacation.
Well, if you're going to put a seat on it, why not put a leather seat on it?
For sure. Whatever. And like, yes, there's definitely people who use these for recreational purposes, and that's all awesome. But like, don't be fooled that, like, you know, these guys and gals running big companies are using these things to show, they're using these things for a efficiency purpose.
Right.
You know,
and to have yield on it.
100%.
Hey, I get to do an extra meeting a week. That extra meeting
in two
holds in 100,000
in the United States up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
Right.
Right. That's a big deal.
Right.
You know, and so, but again, it's like it was like intense. There was no, there was no relaxing.
There was no Cristal being popped.
No, there was no Cristal being popped.
You know, our man, who's our guy? Rick Ross was not on this plane.
No.
Is that correct?
He was not.
Okay.
Not on this
plane. We have confirmation that Rick Ross was not on this plane. Here's the thing, right? So there was a few other comments that flew through into this mm-hmm. chat, into the comments on this post, right? And someone said, you know, not everyone is trying to hustle. Not everyone is a hustler, man. Some people just want to chill and eat the caviar and sip that champagne on the private jet. And my response is, well, I suppose they got that jet by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I suppose their family got that jet by accident.
Yeah.
You know what? Their grandfather got that jet by accident. How far up do you have to go to find the person that was hustling? And let's use that word loosely,
mm-hmm.
working for it.
Yeah.
You don't accidentally get a private jet. You know, God doesn't just come down from the heavens and go, whoa, you look like a chill bro.
No.
Hook this guy up with a, you know, whatever, a Lear.
Yeah, no. No, not the way it goes at all. And so let me go back to that statement, whoever made that. I mean, it's hard for me to like cognitively understand that, because to me, that's the equivalent of being like, look, dude, not everybody's trying to kill it at the gym. Some people just want to be shredded all the time,
right,
and sit on their couch. And it's like, I have like legit cognitive dissonance trying to figure that out. Cause it's like, the whole, and like, yeah, you got inheritance, so you got people who kind of got, you know, in the lucky sperm club and the whole nine, but like at the end of the day, it's
trace
like,
the line, trace the lineage. At some point, you know, Papa was smelting steel or smelting.
Yeah. Okay.
Smelting steel, not yeah. Schmelt.
And by the
smelting
way,
is like a bait you put on a
landed,
bagel.
After they landed, they were probably calculating the cost per hour to be like, how can I cut this down? How can I make this more right. efficient? What can I utilize?
Do I really need two people on the plane?
Do I really need two people on the plane? Maybe I don't need this big a jet. I know this, you know, so-and-so likes it, but, you know, they're constantly trying to get that edge for efficiency, for profitability, to maximizing margins. Is it even worth it anymore? I mean,
how luxurious does that sound, everybody?
Yeah.
Like, that is the furthest thing from luxury.
Yeah. Completely.
Because that is like taking a picture, going to work.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, I'm going to work today.
Yeah.
I'm fucking cool. It's like nobody does that.
Yeah.
You know, try walking to McKinsey and taking a selfie.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's not a thing.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't become a thing.
Yeah.
I am not following you if you are a consultant taking selfies going to work.
It's funny. I mean, this is, you know, I watch. I'm not that active on social, and by not active, I'm not active at all.
That's okay.
I follow obviously my
rest
close
easy,
friends.
My son.
I follow your stuff, but I don't comment. I don't post. And like, trust me, there's more than enough that in the traditional era of social media of like showing the flash that I could show that I deliberately choose not to. And it's like, it's like, you gotta check your mindset really hard if you're a millennial or Gen Z, seriously, because the delta between the perceived reality of those who have made it versus where you are is so fucking skewed and far off from what it actually looks like
in reality.
And like, don't get me wrong, you and I will go out on a Friday, Saturday night for a guy's night and have an awesome and be those guy with the car, you know what I mean? With the cars and the whole nine and this and that. And everybody's like, oh wow, look at, and it's like, yeah, but you didn't see the 82 fucking hours I put in this week of work. And oh, by the way, even though I'm partying tomorrow night, I'm at the gym 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, hangover or not.
Right.
And like, this show doesn't stop. You know what
Ever.
I mean? No. And it's like, cool, we're going to go out Saturday night. Sundays are work days.
Right.
I mean, my schedule is it's we're filming this on Friday, right? It's, I don't know what time is it.
Let's 4:30, hear, 5 let's hear your schedule.
I've been, you know, I usually do Monday through Friday. I will be starting at the gym in the morning, right? So I'll be getting up at 6-7. I'll be starting at the gym.
You and can thank me for that, by the way.
Yeah, thanks for I used to do it in the night. And then I will be working by somewhere between 7:30 and 8:30, depending on the day. Mm-hmm. Usually call it just 8. I will go straight till 8 p.m. 12-hour sprint every single day. I have breakfast on the phone. I have lunch on the phone. I have dinner on the phone.
Right.
Then I'll take a break.
So no Milos, tableside Bronzinos at any point?
Ever.
Right.
Never go out to lunch unless you have a
purpose.
Strong opportunity that there is a client you can win or there's a deal you can close or an investor you can woo or whatever.
Right.
But otherwise, I have a strict no meetings, none of that stuff in the middle of the day unless it is hyper-focused and productive.
Right.
So I'll go straight till 8 p.m., then I'll take a break for about an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, et cetera, just hang. And then I'll always put that last sprint in before going to bed.
Right.
Like as an example, one policy is the Sam Waltman policy or Walton policy, right? The founder of Walmart,
yep.
Who had the empty desk policy. He would never leave his office on a day until every, and this was pre, you know, email,
right.
Every letter was replied to in writing, empty desk. So I have an empty inbox policy, right? And it's not just inbox, it's my, because I have a lot of clients, it's
I would
70 something Slack channel.
I have seen his Slack channel. It looks like it's like the main, it's like the in he's the Matrix freezing. When the fucking the guy has the computer and he's just it's like just blah blah blah. That's your Slack.
Yeah, I know, it's intense.
I don't wish it upon anybody.
But here's the thing, even when I'll go into a meeting and I'll have sometimes hundreds of messages, I'll never let a day go by that I don't go through every single client. And not only every client, I'll go through my, I've built a big team now, I'll go through their messages.
Right.
So that takes an hour and a half. I'll do it every day.
Right.
That is, if you could take one little tactical skill out of this conversation that I promise you will help, have an empty inbox policy.
Right.
Just do it. Go through your text messages, go through your WhatsApp, go through your emails, and go through your Slack or whatever, you know, mediums you're using for communication every day before you go to bed. And if for whatever reason something happens, you absolutely can't, just do it first thing in the morning. But generally speaking, you do it every night.
Right.
That alone will put you in the top 5%. I know it sounds
thorough.
Ridiculous.
You're thorough, extremely thorough.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Be extremely thorough and own every single area of your business.
Yeah, yeah. But it's so easy though to just like look through the inbox and it's like, oh, I missed that. Oh, I mean, every single day I missed an email, I missed this and that, but I don't let the day go by. Every day I get to it.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so that's like a typical day. Friday night, I deliberately will unplug, right? So after this, I don't know what time it is, 4:35 right now. On Friday, I'll go back. I'll put a few more hours right. in.
The Ace of Spades comes out.
Yeah. Well, but it's funny you mention that. So we go out tonight. Like, yeah, it'll look like that, you know, and then people will just see that.
It will look like a rap video. Everybody who's like worried that like we don't ball out. We do ball out.
It'll be fun. Tomorrow I'll do my best, depending on the weather, to take time off. I'll do my best. The problem is I'm so ingrained in this life now, and it's so me that it's really hard for me to legitimately unplug.
Right. Like the beach vacation. Well, I want to finish this out because let me finish this out.
Yeah, so
what you're describing is a really regimented, really challenging lifestyle. And mm-hmm. that's what's afforded you to be able to scale out the agency as fast mm-hmm. as you have. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you have all the toys to show it. You have the lifestyle to show for it, but nobody's just want to go back to the private jet example. Nobody is shirking their responsibilities. Nobody's fucking off. Nobody's living this fairy tale Instagram life. Guys, what you see on Instagram is finely tuned marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I think I'm so absolutely terrible at doing it, the lifestyle stuff. It seems absurd
mm-hmm.
because it's a lie. It's a complete lie. Mm-hmm. If you see me chilling, sitting back, like it's probably a lie mm-hmm. because I'm never doing that.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe I should just post once a week on Fridays when I, you know, they let the dogs out of the house, like, you know, and you wouldn't want to follow that. So like, anyway, I just think it's really important to clear that up because what we're doing, what's happening on social media when you say, I don't know what Gen Z, I don't know what it feels like that involves math, Gen Z, who, I don't know who's what, but basically they're people that grew up with Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's Gen Z or whatever the fuck, right?
Yeah.
If you grew up with Instagram, you have a skewed sense of reality because you must think that wherever you're not, people are in Ibiza, people are in Mykonos, there's a fire dancer everywhere for some reason.
Yeah.
Like people are wearing white linen, sick pants for some, like all the time.
Yeah.
Dude.
I know.
Who are those people? I want to meet them because I've never met them before.
Well, and some of them really do live that life, but then the bill comes at the end of the night.
And then we have to pay for it.
And I'm like, what? I'm like the only guy who didn't take a picture.
I'm the only guy
I have like 400 Instagram followers. These cats got whatever they have. And it's like, everyone's like, yo, you got it.
You got
like,
this one?
Once again.
Once again.
Through. Yeah. That's
you're not happened. Even wearing linen pants.
But I know it's coming. I know it's, I'm not even wearing it's true.
You're not even wearing a cowboy hat.
I know it's coming.
And you are getting stuffed with the bill.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So this is just another rehash of the way you think it looks versus the way it actually looks.
Correct.
And the more comfortable you get with that, I think the happier you're going to be.
Yeah.
Because when you're in the trenches and you're going like, God damn, at what point am I just going to be chilling on the beach sipping a fucking spicy margarita? You're like, never.
Yeah.
Never. Or when you decide to, hey, I'm going to sell this business and you get a slug. And this happens, right? This happens. Okay. And then you get the slug and you go on the beach for a week and you're like, well, you're bored as shit because you're one of the people that is capable of building a business of that size and magnitude and that organization. So you're telling me you're going to go to Tulum and sip a freaking spicy margarita. You're going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to kill myself if I stay here. So, let's go.
You won't. And there's two things. So I almost want to go back to this guy or gal who I'm assuming was a young guy who sent you that message.
Right.
So it's like, look, man, I understand where you're coming from. Right. So first of all, like, I get it. Right. It'd be super cool to have the this and the that without the work that goes into it. And I know this sounds cliche, but I can tell you in my relatively short career thus far and to whatever degree of success you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
like, by far the joy is in the process. I mean, dude, it is. I have this weird thing. So I used to be it used to be really tiny. Like I was like 155 pounds, right? I was probably 30 pounds smaller than I am right now. I was tiny. I didn't have an ounce of muscle on me. Right. And I tried for 2 years.
And if you're just listening to this, Ned McPherson's built like a brick shit house. Everybody, all right? This guy, like, if this guy knocks on your door, you are not opening it. Okay. Let's just leave it at that. All right.
So I worked for 2 years, going to the gym 6 days a week and put 1 pound of muscle on.
Really?
Yeah. 2 years, man. 2 years.
What do we attribute that to?
That failure? To, well, two main things that I had wrong, right? And
secretly, I'm like,
yeah.
Tell me what fruits and vegetables you were eating.
And my business partner at the time was he was a pretty jack guy, you know, this and that. He had already figured it out. And I don't know why he didn't tell me sooner, but eventually he was like, hey, look, man, we got to take a look at your diet. And then we have to take a look at how much weight you're pushing. And I changed two things relating to literally the amount of weight that I was pushing and okay. the rep count. And then I started tracking and literally writing down my macros. And I am not exaggerating that I got onto a specific plan. This is 2 years I gained 1 pound. And I think in 90-ish days, maybe 120, I put on, gosh, it was, I want to say almost 20 pounds of muscle.
Really?
Everybody except my business partner. This is back in the day. Happened to be my roommate, too. Right. Everybody was like, dude, he's doing roids.
Right.
Every fucking person,
right.
including my closest friends, were like, no one changes that quickly.
Right.
And I was like, I really appreciate that because it goes to show that's validation, how much is working.
Right.
All of this to be said, that was one of the most euphoric experiences I've ever gone through in my life. That 90 to 100 day window was, dude, incredible. The feeling to work that hard with no progress and then to make that change and to see the results. Dude, it's so bad that I have this weird thing now where I'm kind of like, this is going to sound super fucked up. I'm kind of like envious a little bit of people who are like out of shape because I'm like, dude, if I woke up in your body, I know exactly the formula tomorrow morning that the next 6 months are going to be ridiculously
just game changing results.
Every girl who's denying you all of a sudden starts taking a second look, this and that, like. And dude, it changes everything, by the way. When you get in shape, it changes everything. We're going to go down a rabbit hole here, but like. For like the girl saying, yeah, that's all there. But dude, the way you're treated by other males,
right?
When you get in shape was night and day difference, right. bro. Like night and day difference. And so even more so than when I built up a you know, sizable net worth, like that pales in comparison to when I physically got in shape.
Interesting.
So again, back to this, you know, whoever this was who said this to you, don't rob yourself of that.
Right.
Dude, don't, like, it's the best part is making that journey, making that product. Dude, you're going to love it. I'm telling you, it's going to be the greatest thing you ever do.
Right.
And it will pave the way into all these other things you're going to accomplish in life. And you will look back and have nothing but gratitude for that struggle. So it's like, whether you want to call it hustle or struggle or whatever, it's like, dude, that's the best part of living.
Right.
You know, and it's like, don't rob yourself of that. So.
Well, and it's really not optional either. Like you either go through this gauntlet that we call life and come out stronger and fucking wearing a helmet, like with like antlers on it, you know, and covered in blood, or you what, cower and everyone forgets about you.
Yeah.
That sucks. That's
sucks
terrible.
Talking about, like, imagine realizing that in your life.
Well, we know people, right, that either hit, you know, the genetic lottery or they hit the actual lottery and some windfall, they get hit by a fucking, you know, they get hit by a car or something. And those people's lives are destroyed.
Yeah.
Because they haven't gone through the pain to build the muscle or the mental muscle to execute on what it's like to have those things, those resources.
Totally. Totally. And I'm telling you, we're having this conversation on a Friday. I've had a rough week, bro. I've had a rough business week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's actually a great position to be talking about this right now. Cause it's like, yeah, I mean, we had a ton of success last year. I mean, we're, you know, the business has really scaled a lot, but like in this moment, you know, I'm jamming with you right now. I am Terminator mode as soon as we leave here.
Right.
100%, you know?
Right.
And again, I'm getting all sorts of whatever. I just last night, someone reached out, dude, I heard about your success. This is so awesome. Like, that, you know, my high school wants to do a thing. And it's like, that's cool. But I'm still in the struggle and will always be because this is who I define myself as now.
Right.
And it's like, I've set new standards for my team and for the company and for my clients and the performance we have with them. And frankly, I set the bar on January 1 and we're nowhere even close.
Yep.
We're nowhere even close. Even though we're 10 times the company we were 2.5 years ago, we're nowhere even fucking close. So that's all I'm looking at. And that's all I'm thinking of. So I am.
There's no, you haven't made it.
No, there's no,
you're not sitting but this is important because people don't understand this.
This is how it's thinking. Right. And I'll still go out tonight and I'll have a good time, but like, dude, it's, you know, I'll take a little bit tonight for dinner and this and that, but it's straight.
Andrew said he was paying tonight, actually. So we're good.
It's about time someone covers the bill. But
thanks, producer Andrew.
There's one other point I do want to, comment on this. Cause you brought up a really good point, which was like, you know, hey, you have this big slug, you sold your company, whatever, you go to the beach, this and that. Here's how I can prove to you won't do that, unless it's a freak thing where you sell your company, is, you know, Atomic Habits is my favorite book.
Yep.
And by the way, anyone listening, if you got one book you're going to read Atomic Habits.
I'm besides mine when it comes out.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll promote it.
It'll be a close second after that. But it's, but Atomic Habits is brilliant. That changed so much for me on how I perceived not goal thinking. I completely eliminated all goals entirely. I went completely systems thinking. But he had, you know, James Clear, the author, had a couple really profound statements in there, like a number of them. Some of them, as an example, is, your goal isn't to run a marathon, he said, or your goal isn't to become, I think it's like a best-selling author.
Right.
Your goal is to become a runner.
Right. Identify with that thing.
The marathon is just one point on the arc of progress. That's it. So here's the thing, is if your goal isn't to make $1 million or $10 million or $100 million or $1 billion or whatever it is, your goal is to become an entrepreneurial hustler.
Right.
Where all of that money and all that stuff is the byproduct on who you are, and who you are is a function of your daily habits.
Right.
Right. And that is it, man. That's it.
And it's empowering because it gives you somewhere to start.
Yeah.
If you're not starting from zero, you go, okay, well, let me take this big ass thing, chop it up into little bite size pieces. I mean, I do this. I still do this on my spreadsheet that I send. If you sign up to my newsletter, you get a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
It's not the sexiest spreadsheet you've ever seen, but what it does is it takes big goals and chops them up into little tiny nuggets that you can knock out in 5 days. It's you start on Monday and you knock it out on Friday.
Yeah.
And if you didn't knock it out on Friday, you'd ding yourself with a bad score.
Yeah.
It's basically like Atomic Habits meets Google Sheets.
Yeah, perfect. No, right. There you go. But it's all for the point of changing habits, right? Yeah. So again, to this guy, you know, to the mindset out there that's like, oh, you're going to sell your company, have this big hit,
right?
Which you put the time in, it'll happen. And then you're going to be on the beach. That's the equivalent of like someone who's been working to win run a marathon and they win. And it's like the next day they hang up the shoes and now they're just like, you know, getting fat. It's like, no, dude, they're back running the next day. That's who they are. It's in every essence of their being.
Yeah.
So again, to the point is it's like, if you don't want to hustle, don't hustle. But like, you're just throwing away your opportunity. And to me, that's your only point in life, is to maximize the opportunities that are given to you and to fulfill what your potential is. Right. And it's like, there's no other way to do that than hustle. There's no, like, nobody on the planet who's ever done anything of really great significance did so without some form of mental or physical
sweat.
Hustle. Yeah. Right. So,
Let's push it a step further. Well, let's use my definition. The point why you're on planet Earth is you're here on planet Earth to make someone else's life easier. Because if you can make someone else's life easier, you've created value, right? Mm-hmm. And if you can do that at scale, you're going to get a ton of little social credits that we call currency, money, deposited in your account, right? With NROC, what are you doing? Yeah. You're creating value for a lot of big companies at scale, and the amount of value that you created maybe 5 years ago, now it's even more.
Right.
So you can charge more for that because you're creating so much more value.
Totally.
So it's really freaking simple.
Yeah.
When you boil it down to first principles, to use the nerdy Silicon Valley language, it's just like all you're doing is trying to help people. And if you can help a lot of people, you're going to probably get paid a lot more money or receive some form of rewards.
Right.
And if you're not helping people, then fuck off.
Yeah. And helping people is I got to hustle to get there.
Well, helping people isn't easy, because here's the ultimate thing. And this is what I learned with my music career. It's like, I don't get to decide how I'm going to help you. You do.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to hear me sing or play on stage or fucking write poetry or do whatever gymnastics, then I have to either change or not be rewarded.
Yeah.
And that's your call, and you, society, the greater people out there. So this is where iteration comes from.
Yeah.
You iterate your way to success, because what you're trying to do is say, where do I go where the most people are going to clap for me?
Mm-hmm.
And when the most people clap for you, hang out in that space, because good shit is about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So look, social media is so so very interesting to me because the ultimate A-B test is going viral now.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, that's true.
It's the ultimate A-B test.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Going viral on TikTok. What TikTok is it's an A-B test machine. It finds an audience, decides who likes it rapidly, faster than anything ever before.
Yeah.
It's a huge mathematical conundrum to do this as fast as they've figured it out. Long story short is, whatever it is that you do, if you have the sickest tennis serve, if you fucking sing while you hit the tennis ball, post it on TikTok to see the reaction, right? Yeah. Because you're basically saying, do people care about this weird thing that I do? And then over time, you just lean more into that thing.
Yeah. Selling before you build.
Yeah. Certainly me making funny faces into my camera on TikTok is not something that I woke up, was born to do. Mm-hmm. I said, well, all right, I'll talk about some digital marketing hacks. I'll talk about some digital nomading hacks. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll do some fitness stuff because I kind of know about that. And I'm like, all right, anyone can talk about that. Mm-hmm. But what is something that I am interested in that I'm the only one who can talk about it?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to do this thing called Rich versus Really Rich. There's this weird little thing that I pick up on, and I'm going to do a little skit.
Yeah.
And I promised myself I would never, ever do a skit on social media.
Now you're the king of skits.
And I'm like the skit guy. Yeah, I'm like trying not, I'm trying to like be like, yeah, that was cool that I did that, but come over here. We're doing some new stuff, right?
Yep. Yep.
So that's the result of iteration.
Yeah, totally.
It's not the result of genius or luck or fucking, it's just like, if you keep knocking over plates, you're eventually going to like knock over the right one.
Yeah. Yeah, but you put it out there, right? And you know, quote, went to sell it and the market really bought it hard. Right. And then continued to buy it hard, and the market was screaming, give us more, you know, and you had.
And now they're like, please stop. Just give us a podcast.
For the love of God.
Do something else.
No, but I love the message of the Rich versus Really Rich thing is awesome, though. You know what I mean? And it really is nothing could be more aligned with the truth, you know, which again, there's this misnomer, especially when you're dealing with people who are still on the up and up, and they kind of have this misconception of the wealthiest people as stomping on the heads of others and this and that. And it's like, dude, it's not even remotely how it is. They are incredibly gracious. Usually they are you first. They are, because again, they've gone through so much shit you can't even imagine. Cause I look at how much shit I've gone through at this point, which I'm like, Jesus Christ. And now I look at people who are 100 times my, and I'm like, I don't even want to know, bro.
What your life looks like.
I don't even want to know, you know, like the, you know, what you've had to go through. So it's like, they value that introduction to you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's almost like it comes full circle. Like when you start out, you know, you kind of have this genuine interest in other people, mm-hmm. and you kind of stick to your morals and you stick to your principles. And then as you get a little coin and as you get a little success, you get a little cocky, you get a little arrogant, and you drift away. And then when you really hit it, you come right back to where you started, which was this, you know,
you get knocked back into line.
Yeah, that's a like, better way to put it.
You're a jackass. You're a jackass. Get back in line.
You get knocked back into line. And like, you know,
sometimes physically by force, right?
Yeah.
You're the jackass in the bar. Keep that up.
Yeah.
See what
happens. In my case, it was financially. Going back to how we started this conversation, which is like, you know, I had all this stuff popping off, and all of a sudden then we're going to these, you know, we're getting a deck of $1,000 a month, which for me at the time, I was like, this is crazy. You know, it was just me at the time. I couldn't believe it. You know, and the company I'd started with my business partners, like we were, you know, paying ourselves okay. Like it wasn't bad, but like now it was considerably more, like, you know, 2 to 3 times more on the side gig. So I, you know, got all aggressive, and I don't want to say I got cocky. I didn't get cocky. I got foolish.
Mm-hmm.
And man, did I put myself in a tough
foolish
spot.
With reinvesting in the business, with buying a fancy car. Foolish with what?
Yeah. Some expenses in the business that I never should have made, that I was like, well, this is what people do. They reinvest in their business and they pay for this new office space and they sign this 6-month lease contract.
Starting to play business guy a little bit.
And there was like the coolest new building over here that had this beautiful view of Miami, and I took the corner unit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm like 5 months into this thing. But again, I had so much profit. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
We could afford it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I lost half my revenue. because two of my clients no fault of my own, really, just they had, there was, you know, without getting into their business, what happened, but like, you know, just kind of coincidentally lost them. And then I'm starting to get underwater, but I'm like, I'll get out. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get out. And now I'm using the Biz Amex to cover things. And before I know it, I'm, you know, 70, 80, 90K in debt. Yeah. I don't know, maybe it was more at the time. So 2017 was a real like come to Jesus moment for me. Right. That was a brutal year. That was my abyss. Right. And I fought and clawed and somehow survived the year. And New Year's Eve on 2017, I made a pact with myself that I was going to work every day in 2018.
Okay.
And I was going to push the envelope. And I did. I didn't take one day off. No Saturdays, no Sundays, nothing. I didn't take Christmas off, 4th of July, nothing.
Right.
Every single day. And like, don't get me wrong, I flew to see my family on Christmas. I'm originally from Boston. I went back up there.
Right.
But like, you know, I was in the morning working. Then we did like the breakfast thing. I went back to working. Then we did, you know, pres, whatever. I went back to working. So like, it was still a work day.
You dressed up like Santa Claus, went back to work.
It was still on my
computer. The normal stuff. Yeah.
But point being is that was a really critical year because I was like, if I fail and I go down in flames, at least I can say there was nothing more I could have done.
Right.
I pushed it as hard as you, and I lost a lot of friends. I totally burnt the relationship that I was in that crashed and burned. I remember it was one of the only time in my life, a buddy of mine from California had come out, and I, after the workday, I'd shot over to the beach to see him for a drink. And we were like 10 minutes of conversation. He was like, dude, you seem awful.
Mm.
And I was like, nah. And he's like, dude, you're awful. Like, what's going on? And I was like, well, because this is getting worse than I thought. Well, yeah.
Turns out I'm only 248 days into my 365 of just doing nothing but work.
But I did it. I did it.
And but this is in my, so this is in the show notes, right. Like nonstop hustle versus what I would say you have now, which is
quite different.
Yeah. Quite different.
Right.
Now you have said to me at one point when you caught me doing the 365 mm-hmm. fight psychopath fucking work thing when we met, you're like, you know, I don't know if I do that.
Yeah.
Let's find out where we should live in this.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, it was one of the greatest decisions I never want to do again, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I am eternally grateful I did it. I did it. First off, mm-hmm. I didn't miss a day. I did it. The business majorly turned around.
Okay.
2019 was a banner year. We blew up, right? It was a ton more success. And my personal lifestyle started to take off shortly after that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't change it for anything. I can tell you right now, it is 100% not the optimized way to work or live. Absolutely not. To those listening, I would say, depending on your tolerance for pain, is try it. You don't have to go a year like I did, but try it to push the envelope. And I'm glad I did it because I know what it's like to go full fucking tilt, dude.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where it's like nothing else matters
right.
for a long period of time, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really glad I did it because now I know what that feeling's like. And now I can weigh myself when I'm getting too close to it and I can pull back a little bit. But my optimum zone now is about 80% of that.
Well, right. And we're going to pull in Pareto's P's because then it's where we're thinking about 80-20. Like, do you have to work 7 days a week? You could work 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And maybe get most of the yield from that.
Yeah.
Right. And that's kind of how I am. Like, I don't want to say, I don't really take a day off, but I take like a half day off. And for me, it's like, if I get it, if I just can get it, I take it.
Yeah.
So this is some weird thing. Like, if you operate on the weekends mindset, you're probably not an entrepreneur. Because like sometimes my weekend might be like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't have anything to do today. I'm guess, am I allowed to leave my office? And then like I'll like try to be a normal person. I'll walk like, I'll go to like the design district and just like walk around. I'm like, it's luxury.
Yeah.
Don't even buy anything. I'm just like, the air is just so fresh.
Yeah. No,
God. Man. Yeah. Buy $500 sneakers I'll never wear. But this is, I think there's diminishing returns because at some point the human body, the mind, dude, there's no way that you were functioning at optimal headspace for 365.
No, it was a
your zombie personal had challenge. To be zombie mode at one point.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Totally. And again, I burnt like every relationship, man. You know what I mean? It was not good times from some respects, it was ultimately what saved my business. On the other hand,
right.
So
priority,
yeah,
which was that.
Yeah. And I'm a big believer on like testing limits. So I tested the limit. I know what that red line looks like now. Yeah. And I know where the sweet spot is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The red line. Yeah. We're always trying to see where that
I'll red still line touch is. It though. I'll still hit the red line for like a week at a time. Right. I mean, you will too. I mean, we both will, but it's right. like short lived now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, my December was full red line. Basically, I was transitioning from having this lower and lower skit output for TikTok, Instagram, mm-hmm. whatever, transitioning to doing this new format. By the way, guys, this format started as an experiment where we had no idea if we were going to launch the podcast. Yeah. You know, you want to talk about taking chances and bumping into reality, like off camera. Producer Andrew is in college and just like approaches me as like, I'll just do anything because I just want to learn.
Yeah,
that was his pitch, and I'm like, well, that's kind of exactly what I need right now. Mm-hmm. I was like, can you just sit down and be a podcast host? And he was like, yeah, sure. Can we write questions? I was like, yeah. So we wrote questions, and he just sits down. I look at the screen. I'm like, this is the sickest podcast, man. This is amazing. Yeah. And we look professional. Yeah. You look like a professional podcast host. The funniest thing about him jumping in is like, dude, I change anything. I get a haircut. People are like, you got your haircut. I change my glasses. No one said anything. They were like, oh, I guess that's just the podcast host.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They just like, it was just natural. It was this beautiful, magical thing. And I was like, okay, that was so hard, but oh my God, I see the promised land right now, because, you know, anyone who makes content knows that sitting down and filming a podcast is not an easy task, but mm-hmm. you can build a team behind it. You can't build a team behind creating one-to-one unique skits every single week that, you know, eventually you guys are going to be like, okay, what else do you do, Nick?
You what know? Else you got?
What else you got? Come on. There's got to be something else that you do.
Yeah, yeah.
It started as a complete iteration. Now, I lost my train of thought. We were talking about, like, if you can grind nonstop.
And then redlining for too long, right. kind of where that sweet spot is. And,
yeah. So I redlined it for December. That involved working through Christmas, like going to dinner Christmas Eve, Christmas going to lunch Christmas Day, and then just saying like, hey, I got to get out of here, guys, and going back and working.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the year, I wanted to say that the podcast was live. There's a whole team behind this thing, mm-hmm. okay? Meaning I don't have to edit this after we leave, right? Mm-hmm. This whole thing is relatively seamless. We'll get there. And in addition to that, my AI company is in the right place, okay? So those two things had to be sealed before I... Boop, like
yeah.
before the, you know, I pulled out the Ace of Spades and flipped on the Rick Ross album, because yeah. I will tell you this, I would not be letting it loose on New Year's Eve if this wasn't all had a fucking bow on top of it by
yeah.
December 31st. I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because you stop and you take a break and you put your knee down when the job is done,
mm-hmm.
whether it jives with a holiday or not.
Yeah.
So start with the book, read the book first. Cause that book you can just, the $15.
Yeah.
Most of us got the $15. And after you get the book, go find your freaking Jersey Mike.
Yeah. Jersey Mike.
Go find your Hoboken Mike.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, dude. Thanks for coming. That's a pod.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, brother.